And we all say together, God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. Now for our speaker. I welcome Peter M.
My name is Peter. I'm a recovered alcoholic. Thank Kevin for that tremendous introduction. Thank you very much. Good thing I wasn't parking my car just now. First things first, congratulate this group for keeping the doors open for as long as you have and passing on the message of recovery and showing others that there's a difference between grace and spiritual fitness. And we get spiritually fit through the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous. And congratulate all the celebrants for bearing witness to the people just walking in the door that Alcoholics Anonymous, the 12 steps in the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, and a God, as you understand him, works and gets us spiritually fit and gets us to a place called recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. I'm a recovered alcoholic, and I say that because I am, and anything less than that would be falsely humble. So it's great to be here with people who walk shoulder to shoulder with me and I with you. It's grateful to share this message of recovery, and hopefully we're shouting it from the rooftops and shouting the power of God from the rooftops and the great fact and nothing less than that. So I feel right at home sharing with brothers and sisters who are walking this path. But when we're on this path, let us not judge or be critical of those who are not, because our job is to be powers of example, not horrors of example, and we work by attraction and not promotion. And too often I've seen people get a little bit of information from the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, and condemn our brothers and sisters who are still finding their way and looking at their failures rather than as part of their process to get here. It took me 7 treatment centers to wind up in Alcoholics Anonymous as I am right now. And the first 6, I managed 2-day sobriety and hated people with the big book and who talked about God. But God brought me to a state of reasonableness and a place of being teachable through the gift of desperation, and my life has never been the same. So I'm very grateful to be here as a recovered member. And as I said, anything less than that would be falsely humble. I'm not looking to be a recovering member of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's not my goal. I'm not looking for abstinence. That's not my goal. My goal is to seek experience with this power called God of my understanding and get to a place called recovered and enhance the experience that is so freely given to me. I know what recovering looks like. It's page 52, and I don't want a part of that. I'm not cured, but I get to a place called recovered in the sunlight of the Spirit, and I get to grow in understanding and effectiveness. My experience, I will talk to you about currently where I am and what this book and what this God has done for me. All the work I get to do by living in all 3 sides of the triangle. All the work I get to do by working with others. All the step work I get to do. All of it in our sacred fellowship, this glorious fellowship called Alcoholics Anonymous. Where it has taken me to is a place of silence and stillness, which is where I come from. With no noise in the head, no attachments or expectations of what my life should be like, but very present and mindful to this moment where I am with this breath, understanding that I'm not even one with the breath, but one that supplies the breath. That's who I'm a part of. And that erases all the traffic in the head, all the noise in the head, grinds the ego into dust and allows me to be present with you, awake to this moment, mindful and breath with you. That's not page 52. That's the sunlight of the Spirit. That's part of being a recovered alcoholic. That's part of having a life of prayer and meditation, to which I sit 3 times a day. That's having a life of inventory. Wednesday nights is usually my sponsor night. I'm sober 23 years, and I still call up my sponsor and ask him for permission if I can cut out on him early and go do this talk. Because I work with accountability and responsibility and something called consistency. It's part of being a recovered alcoholic. God separated me from alcohol June 23rd, 1988. And I'm here tonight with a little bit of dignity, a little bit of integrity, and a whole lot of being recovered because of a whole lot of God that has been given to me. When I first got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I thought, well, I got grace. I got God's grace. That's all I need. I can keep moving. I got God's grace. And through the pain of just staying with God's grace, I found out from my own experience the difference between grace and spiritual fitness. And that's why we come to meetings like this, to get spiritually fit, which the ego wants no part of. The ego doesn't want us sitting in a meeting like this because it might die or might be unemployed and it needs to keep working. We got this thing called the thinking mind where the main problem lies. It's our predator. The thinking mind doesn't want to listen to a guy like me. The thinking mind doesn't want any kind of a meeting like this because it might die and might be unemployed. So it looks at ways to get out of here and try to minimize our addiction, try to rationalize our behavior. But the truth is the truth. And we found out, what I have found out by going through the 12 steps, I came in here with a whole bunch of conceptions and misperceptions about recovery and God. And I found that the truth is the truth until you find out it no longer isn't. And that happens when a sponsor challenges you and confronts you. And we get to go through the book. And little by slowly, those belief systems start to be grinded into dust along with the ego. And then one day we wake up and we stand free. Most of us are walking around or into AA with something called a mind-dominated life. And we see through the mind and we hear through the mind and we speak with the mind, which is all fear-based and insecure. And we live along the lines of human consciousness, wondering, how am I going to look good? How am I going to sound good? I hope you like me, because if you don't, I'm so attached to your opinion of me, then what am I going to do? I'm going to run here and hope you like me. And if you don't, I have to run there. And we're walking into AA going, I'm good, everything's good, I'm spiritually fit. Most of us go through AA year after year after year, wondering, when am I going to get it? When is it going to get better? Until we have a shift in consciousness and we start living along the lines of God consciousness and no longer dominated by this thinking mind. And that is true freedom. And we get to meet resistance with no resistance and be still in a storm and move through it. Or we may scrape our knees from time to time, but we move through it. Stillness is what has been one of the best gifts I've been given in Alcoholics Anonymous. The greatest gift, other than the obvious sobriety that I've been given by a loving God, is this: knowing that I am known by my Creator. And that didn't happen by walking into Alcoholics Anonymous and depending on an AA meeting to keep me sober, because they don't keep me sober. That's contemporary AA. My meetings don't keep me sober. I came to get, I stay to serve. God could and would if He was sought, and I seek this power with the desperation of a drowning man. So I'm grateful to be here to share with you what it was like living life on self-will, what happened to spiritual revolution, what it's like now, where am I currently? What's my current practice look like? What's our current practice look like? Where am I currently with this power called God? What does that look like? How much of my life is running on self-will? How much of my ego has reconstructed and shown up in different areas of my life? Because we can get in Alcoholics Anonymous, if we start getting untreated, we start to experience fear because we're agnostic and our life is a little bit unmanageable even though we're not drinking. Because what alcoholism does for folks like us who've been around, it will go underground and resurface in other areas. They're called sprees. They're called thinking sprees and fear sprees and money sprees and sex sprees. And then we walk into AA and they go, how you doing? I'm fine. Everything's great. Everything's good. All right. You know, the thinking sprees, most of us walk around with a lot of voices talking all at once. Just a show of hands, how many people drove over here alone tonight? All right. See, every one of you guys, it's an honest program. You're all being dishonest. Because if you think about the ride over here, how many people were talking to you at the same time? Right? And how many people you answering at the same time? Right? The ex-husband, the ex-wife, the boss, the new job, the people you're going to meet at the meeting, things from 20 years ago that you're arguing as you're driving to the meeting to walk in and going, I'm spiritual, I'm profound, everything's good. Right? Then we get back into the car and those same people are going to keep talking to us and they tuck us in at night. When we get up in the morning, they're still waiting for us. The chatter of 1,000 voices. It's obsessive and compulsive. Well, every one of those voices are fear-based and insecure, and that's where we operate out of. The great news I come to offer you is that God could and would if He was sought in that area as well. And the sprees get grinded into dust and we get to a place of stillness. We get to a place called the sunlight of the Spirit. We get to a place of recovered and looking to serve as messengers of God, no longer looking to be served, but to serve. So what's my current experience look like, right? My first drink came when I was about 14 years old. I grew up in Brooklyn. where the only requirement for membership in Brooklyn is a pinky ring, sunglasses, and gold jewelry. There were guys back in Brooklyn that changed how it works into how you're doing. And I was standing on the corner of 75th Street and 20th Avenue in Bensonhurst, Brooklyn. It was a Saturday night, and my friends were drinking Colt 45 beer. Now, up until this first drunk, I was restless, irritable, and discontented. I was fear-based and insecure. I had a little bit of a stutter going on. I hated my name. My name was Peter, and I thought I had a real wimpy sounding name, so I would lie about my name. And I had lost my mom about 6 months prior to my first drunk at the hands of alcoholism. After several attempts, she succeeded in taking her life. She committed suicide. Because she suffered what we suffer from, humiliation, degradation, and hopelessness at the hands of booze and alcoholism. And her way to go was to take her life. My design for living was taken from me. I had a guy at home who was cunning, baffling, and powerful. I called him God. I called him Dad. I felt like God. My dad would look at me and I'd shake in my shoes. Anything he said was right and I was always wrong. And if he looked you in the eye and you blinked, you were lying. And I grew up with this man, and he told me not to drink on the corner. I listened to him all the time until this one Saturday night. My friends passed around a quart of Colt 45 beer. My hand went in there. I took a few pops off that beer, and it went down, and nothing happened to me. I said, this isn't too bad. The cops didn't drive up. My dad didn't turn the corner like he would usually catch me. I didn't get into any kind of fights. Everything's pretty good. I'll take a little bit more, not knowing that more was going to be my drink for a long time. And as I continued to drink Colt 45 beer, something indescribably wonderful happened to me. I got to feel nice. I got warm. Everything was good. You know that first drunk where everything gets electric, everything becomes neon and bright. I got taller and better looking. I had hair on my chest by the end of the night and some beer muscles, right? And all the girls look really pretty. I don't know about you, when I was drinking and getting drunk, she looked just like Bo Derek. And I would come to in the morning, she looked like Bo Diddley, and I went, I got to that jam. Right? Right? But there I was, and I was drinking Colt 45 beer. I mean, my dirty Harry and Beretta rolled into one. And I shared just this the other night. The end of the night, I wanted to be Al Pacino, you know. And Colt 45 beer was doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. I was able to pack into the stream. The pain of losing my mom dissolved. The fear of my dad dissolved. The fear of who I was dissolved. Everything was okay. You know what it did for me? It made me present to the moment. There was no thought life involved. There was nothing. The way I live now, because of God, with no thought, just being. Beingness is a state of a place of consciousness that I walk with. Back then, it took a whole lot of beer to get me still. All the voices stopped. I was present. I love the effect produced by alcohol. I've heard many people say alcohol was their problem. Well, maybe at the end it was. It was called untreated alcoholism. Alcohol was not a problem for me. Alcohol was a solution to my alcoholism. I drank on alcoholism. It worked. I didn't know it was going to turn in its flight like a boomerang, as Bill says, and cut me to ribbons. Who knew my first time drinking at 14, loving the effect produced by alcohol, that I suffered from a phenomenon called craving? Step one stuff. That when I drink alcohol, the craving's always intensified. There's no such thing as satisfying the craving. More was my drink. Who knew about a mental obsession? I just knew I drank, give me more. I keep thinking about the next one, keep thinking about the next one. And who knew of a spiritual malady? Never heard of these words. But I do remember this. When the night was winding down and my friends were going home, I was scared to death. Don't leave. I want to continue this. Don't leave. I like the effect produced by alcohol. I didn't know I stepped onto a road paved right to hell. Fear-based and insecure, always second-guessing every move I made. If I was here, I should be there. If I was there, I should be there. I pour alcohol on that. I'm okay. The problem was it wasn't just pouring a little bit of alcohol. The body said, send more down. And my mind kept saying, yeah, keep going. We have a mind that'll take us back to that which is killing us. And if it isn't a spree, it'll be a drunk. Main problem centers in the mind, not the body. Too often our AA meetings, we treat the body. Didn't drink today, you're a winner. Okay, give you a chip. Off you go. We treat the symptoms of the illness rather than causes and conditions of the illness. And the only solution, an antidote to that, is God. Right? You got this 90 meetings in 90 days. Where's God in that? I don't know. We got a person sitting in an obsession, walks into the AA meeting by the grace of God, and the best we can offer is make 90 meetings in 90 days. Who's playing God with a statement like that? Rather than giving in a big book, I'll stop with you right now. Knew nothing about this back then. I just liked the effect produced by alcohol. The first time I got drunk, it was euphoric. It was great. I went home that night. I got up the next morning and I remembered everything. I remembered all the women I was talking to. Well, they were 14 and 15. The older guys, rebels without a clue, they were 17 and 18. These were my elders, right? I remembered everything that took place. I didn't wake up in a jail cell. No fistfights. Everything was okay. My dad never showed up. The police never showed up. I love the effect produced by alcohol. When I went into the park Sunday morning to play basketball with the older guys, my shoulders were about this wide. I was a man's man. I got my stripes. Finally. More important than that, the external stuff, was what was going on within. I found a solution for what was tearing me down day after day after day. Found a panacea for my ills. I can shut down the loss of my mom. I can shut down the fear of my dad. I can shut down the fear of trying to live life. I can shut down the fear of just growing up. I can shut down the fear by drinking alcohol. I had a panacea for my ills and it worked. And I couldn't wait for the following Saturday to roll around so I can capture that elusive feeling once more. It allowed me to deal with the rest of the week. I can deal Monday through Friday because I know Saturday I'm going to put my hand in there, grab a few pops off that court, and off I go. Love the effect produced by alcohol. Well, Saturday wasn't good enough after a while because then it became Friday and Saturday and Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And then Thursday. And I had an idea one day. Why wait till Thursday? Let's get going on Wednesday, right? Because I like the effect produced by alcohol. And little by slowly, the shift in perception starts to happen where my friends aren't good enough. I have to find other people who drink like me. Where I don't feel so uncomfortable about the amount I'm drinking. I started to look at my family completely different. Suddenly, they were the problem, not me. Suddenly, people who adored me and wanted the best for me were suddenly in my way. Everything was in my way, and I was in collision with everyone. Unmanageability is never an external condition. It's always an internal condition, but I was always looking outwards as that's my problem, and my knee-jerk reaction was to remedy the external world. When she loves me, when I make enough money, when I get the right car, when I live in a good neighborhood, then I will be okay within. That's delusional, and I see people in AA running that dream for a long time and passing it on to new people. Get that job, you'll be okay. No, they won't. Get God, you'll be great. But that's how it was for me back then. My drinking, as Bill says, assumed more serious proportions. And I started to become a thief and steal from my family. My family would leave money and jewelry around the house like you would in your house. It's safe. One morning I woke up and discovered my dad's checkbook, started forging his name on some checks. I did this for a short time. I would cash a check, go to a local bodega, go to a local liquor store. They knew my dad, cash it, give me some liquor, give me some beer. Off I went, and I had a nice little thing going on. But I was too stupid to understand or know about checking statements, and you got all those things back in the mail. And then this guy came looking for me. Now, my dad makes Tony Soprano look like Tinkerbell, so when he was looking for me, I knew I was in trouble. Right? And he showed up. I was sitting in a car with this girl in Lower Manhattan by the Southbridge Towers, across the street from the Brooklyn Bridge. My dad drove up. His deportment shouted. He was a very angry man. He jumped out of the car, screamed my name, walked across the street. I told her, you talk to him. I'm out of here, and I start running away. You know, I was a man's man back then. And he caught me, and I went to my first treatment center. Now, who knew about treatment? I mean, we had taken my mom to places. We didn't know they were treatment centers, sanitariums, things like that. Who knew about treatment centers? But off I went to my first treatment center, and I didn't know what to expect. And I remember walking into treatment, and I saw people in there who had been in treatment centers. Right? I was a newbie. You do this more than once? I saw heroin addicts. I saw real alcoholics. I saw people in their 50s sitting in treatment looking beaten up. I said, oh, my God, I started to cry. I got to go home, call my dad. And he says, you're not going anywhere. 28 days later, they gave me all these charts and graphs about what I suffer from. They talked about my inner child, my dysfunctional family, my triggers, my enablers. I needed a drink after that for sure. Right? In fact, I hated my family more on the way out of treatment than on the way in. I knew it was their fault. They're enablers. Right? I ran the mom card for a long time. Oh, mom committed suicide. You know, I'm young and I'm innocent and I need a drink over this. And they say, okay, we know it's, let's talk about how you feel about this. I feel sick. Give me a drink. Right? I can say that because I'm in a treatment center business. So 28 days later, I get out of treatment. I had a girlfriend meet me at the door with a little jug. And I says I was going to go to an AA meeting. I inquired about AA, never went. I pick up the jug, cracked the seal, the liquor went down. The phenomenon called craving was back. See, alcoholism doesn't care how long we're separated from it. It doesn't care. It's cunning, baffling, and powerful, and incredibly patient. It'll lay around. It'll lay around a year, 6 months, 90 days, 2 years, 5 years, and it'll endorse unspiritual behavior and make it very spiritual, make it very acceptable. You don't need to call your sponsor. You're you. You don't need to write inventory. Don't worry about that force. In fact, don't even go to a meeting because you know what to do, and that's what I did. And I would get drunk instantly. Craving would take over. Obsession was going. Nothing to remedy the spiritual malady. I was a drunk and untreated until I picked up a drink again. And I was even worse. Being separated from alcohol has little to do with being a recovered alcoholic. Any chronic relapse in here will tell you that. And I quickly made my second treatment center. And I made my third treatment center. Got a job as a longshoreman in South Brooklyn waterfront. I went to work for my dad. This was a job that was totally 100% impossible to get fired from. My dad fired me twice. Right? I would get paid on Wednesday and not show up on Thursday. There's some rough characters that run around that environment. And if you had someone stand up for you, they would give you money. But they like a little bit back each week until you pay them the full amount. And if you didn't, they came looking for you and they weren't bringing Dunkin' Donuts. You were in trouble. And I would get into scrape after scrape after scrape. My family, by the time God separated me from alcohol, June 23rd, 1988, my family was suffering from full-blown, untreated alcoholism. And they're not alcoholic. You hear what I just said? My family's not alcoholic, and they were suffering from full-blown, untreated alcoholism. Our big book tells us that years of living with an alcoholic will make any wife or child neurotic. The whole family is, to some extent, ill. That's putting it mildly. By the time God separated me, June 23rd, 1988, my family was as sick as I was, and they had nothing to go to remedy it. And when I went to work with my dad, he started to experience the hideous four horsemen. My grandparents started to experience the hideous four horsemen. My kid brothers who felt safe around me started to experience the hideous four horsemen. My family was sick and suffering because what owned me now owned them. I don't get, in some of our AA, don't drink and go to meetings. You didn't drink today, you're a winner. Let's go knock on a door and see if the employer is okay with that. Let's go knock on mom and dad's door and see if that's okay. Does that pay a bill? Let's go to our children, our husbands and wives, say, honey, listen, I haven't had a drink in 5 years. How's that doing? And she says, you're better off drinking. I don't like the way you are. Right? But we get to wake up through this message in the Big Book Alcoholics Anonymous with a personal experience with a loving God in the sacred rooms of AA, and we get great power. See, we're no longer powerless in alcohol, in Alcoholics Anonymous. We get great power. God's taking care of the booze problem. And there aren't two powers. There's one power, God, and that's it, all love and no opposite. The myth I was growing up with in AA is that there's a power called God and there's power called alcoholism, and I have to get God to go fight alcoholism. Guess what? If there's two powers, my belief system is that one day that other one might win. I'm in fear. The conversion was, there is no separateness, there is only oneness, and there is only one power. Our book talks about that. May you find him now. It doesn't find them now. Find him now. One power and one power only, and there is no fighting. We cease fighting anything or anyone. When we're right with God, we're not fighting booze anymore. The addiction's been remedied by God. We get our spiritual wings and we go fly. And the great power we get in AA is to heal and touch the lives of others. That's what we should be shouting about from the rooftops in Alcoholics Anonymous. We get great power to heal and touch the lives of others. Get a newcomer walking in the door who's ripped up from this thing called alcoholism, who's full of humiliation and degradation and can't even look you in the eyes, looking at their shoes all the time, doesn't know what to do because we think we know their story, and we do. And they sit down and nursing a cup of coffee, feeling like one big mistake, but they get with a big book sponsor, a guru in AA. And after 30 days or 60 days or 90 days, they've gotten their spiritual wings. We have a different person. We've healed that person through the power called God. Huh? That person's going to go home and spread that message into his or her home. And that God power is going to affect other people as well. And little by little, they will wake up. They will feel safety. They will feel compassion. They will feel love, all because of what we get to do in the sacred rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't get just don't drink and go to meetings. You see how that shortchanges what we do here? My family was dying of untreated alcoholism, and it was all about me. Why would alcoholism give me a mustard seed of compassion for anyone? Why wouldn't alcoholism give me a sense of patience and tolerance and kindness of understanding towards anyone? Alcoholism is consumed with one thing, keeping me drunk or getting me dead. And if you're in the way, I'll step over you. I'll go around you. I'll go under you. You're in the way. And God would send a boat every once in a while, pull me up, but I couldn't see it, couldn't hear it, didn't want any part of it. Until we get to that place. And it's the worst moment in most of our lives, that bottom. I had an experience outside the Port Authority in Midtown Manhattan. We're given from time to time these moments of clarity where we could be blind drunk and we're struck sober. No matter what is going on in our life, God is God and interrupts our death. It happened to me outside the Port Authority. I was struck sober. I took stock of myself in this moment. I was filthy. I looked like a bum. I hadn't been home for God knows how long. Lost contact with my family. There were no relationships. There was no girlfriend. There was no wifey poo. There was no job. There was nothing. It was panhandling and getting money to get drunk. And God strikes me sober. It's the flimsy reed that proves to be the loving and powerful hand of God. We just have to hold on. And what I did in that moment was curse God. You did this to me. You took my mom. You took my family. And you turned me into this. And I had venom and hate towards this loving God. Right? But God judges no one. We can get to a place in oneness with God where we stand and judge no one. And just look at their failures as part of their process. Even those who say, don't drink and go to meetings. Let's challenge them. Let's challenge them, but never judge or condemn. I went about my business. I don't know what happened to me after that moment outside the Port Authority. But it was a short time later, and God throws out another wrath. Because God, when the intent is pure, our God will not give up the way we won't give up on our children. And the intent was pure with me. Perhaps is since I've been an infant, I would never be that pure again. But June 23rd, 1980, I made a sincere plea to a God. I call God out. If you're out there, reveal yourself to me. I can't do this anymore. I'm done. And God said, enough, I have other work for you to do, and interrupted my death, and I held on with the desperation of a drowning man. What God did in that moment was connect the dots for me and sends a life raft in the form of my dad. If it wasn't for the courage, strength, and direction that God gave my dad, you certainly have a different speaker here tonight, and I would be history. But God works through people, and it isn't only people in AA, it's people. God is God, and God will say, you, go help him. You, go help her. We have no choice over that. We're messengers. We serve, and God will use civilians and people in AA to get one of us to safety. I don't get this. God's a gentleman. He'll ask to come in. You have to invite God into the room. God's a gentleman. Really? Really? Here's how I challenge that. If we had a son or a daughter, a husband or wife in the next room committing suicide, are we going to wait for an invitation to go in and save them? Or are we going to kick the door open and pull them out? That's what God will do for us. It's what he did for me. And in this moment of clarity, in the back of a hallway, I had been homeless for some time. I had soiled, blood-stained clothes on. I had construction boots with holes in them. I had a turtleneck and a jacket. It's June. I'm sweating and cold at the same time. I'm vomiting wherever I go. I'm having these crying jags constantly. And I was in serious, serious trouble. If I live to be 100, I'll never be as old as a day. I walked into AA. I went to the payphone to call my dad, Colette, because I had no money. And I would cry and go on to the next phone. And I would cry and go on to the next phone. And then God planted me with, along with the seed of willingness, was a seed of compassion. And it looked like this. I can't call my dad, because if he comes to get me, his oldest son, in this condition, I will break his heart for sure. And I couldn't do that. Suddenly, I couldn't do that. A mustard seed of compassion was given to me along with the mustard seed of willingness, which we will move a mountain with. My dad had an intuitive thought. He was in Atlantic City, that I was in trouble. And he trekked back from Atlantic City to Brooklyn, good 4-hour drive. And he went looking for him and he finds me, because God will connect the dots when we don't know how. My dad find me and gets out of the car and walks across the street like a loving parent. And I collapsed in his arms and he held me up and he kept saying, I'm not going to lose my son to this. He had every right to beat me up and smack me and kick me and chase me. And what God gave my dad was compassion as well. And he kept this mantra going, I'm not going to lose my son to this. I don't know who he was talking to, but I was very, very aware, acutely aware of what was taking place. And it took this to get my dad's arms around me, and I felt like a son safe in his dad's arms. It was God all over it. Our roots were grasping new soil in the worst moment of our lives. It was the beginning of a new day for the two of us, and we were to walk shoulder to shoulder upon this journey. But who knew it then? See, my mind can't comprehend the power of God. My mind can't understand God. You can't even explain a God experience. What I'm saying to even falls short, but the movement that goes on with God is profound. It's life-changing forever. And off I went to my seventh and last treatment center. And I was becoming incredibly teachable by the day, because I knew my way doesn't work. And still I bottomed out in my first 6 months of AA, because the ego quickly reconstructed. And after bottoming out almost 6 months of the day, I sought help again. And I went to a gentleman's door. And I says, here's my drama. You know, newcomers are, when they call you up, you say hello, and 45 minutes later, they're still talking, right? Right? You don't understand? Let me explain. I did that to this guy. And he waited for me to take a deep breath, and he said this to me. He says, Peter, where are you with God in the 12 steps? I says, when do you start the steps? He says, when you stop throwing up, you're late. I wanted, let's go home and read page 449 about acceptance and have a cup of tea and talk about our feelings and our issues, right? He didn't care about that. He was interested in saving my life. And if he disturbed me on a question of alcoholism, tough. Maybe good, better for me. After about 10 months of living out in Minnesota, where I went for more treatment, I was brought home to my first home group called the Free Spirit Group, and my first appointed teacher showed up. And this gentleman took me from the cover of the big book to the first portion of our book, page 164, and we methodically walked through the 12 steps and had a life-changing experience. After about 10 years or so working with this great teacher, we can outgrow our teachers. If they're not growing and understanding and effectiveness, and we are, we will go past them. And a new teacher was put in my life, and I prayed, Father, please, I need a new teacher. What do I do? And God provided a gentleman from Texas, Mark H., to be my new appointed teacher. And my life was completely revolutionized over and over and over again. Because I'm one of those folks now who work the first 9 proposals and get rocketed into 10 and 11, which gives me power to move through the first 9 and continually killing self off. Less self, more God. More God, less self. My job is to kill self. Experience the death of self before the physical death. In order to be free and present and mindful and awake and come from stillness rather than noise. Because of what I found in Alcoholics Anonymous and been given the ability and the power to go pass this message on, little by slowly my family has been reassembled. Through the power of meditation, I got to a place that I know that my God knows me. And I've been able to heal and reconcile and resolve a lot of differences that plagued me on my way into AA. Life is problematic. My family's gone through our challenges. But little by slowly, we walk with them. We walk with this power called God. And I was the troubled child for the longest time. Somehow, some way, I'd become the point man in my family. The spiritual life makes no sense to the thinking mind. The spiritual life makes no sense. So we don't figure it out. We just walk with it. We walk free, which a state is a state of consciousness. We walk free and recovered. I'm grateful to be here. That's all I got. Peace.
Give one more hand to Mr. Peter M., please. Thank you, sir, very much. And with that, look, everybody, for one more minute, quiet down. Let's close our eyes for one more minute. Our Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory forever and ever.